You've tuned in to Naturopathic Earth Radio with certified health consultant and former obese child, A. Gregory Luna, where you get the latest on clean living, natural remedies, effective weight loss tips, and sound naturopathic principles from experts and biohackers from around the world and Gregory himself. Don't be a slave to Big Pharma. Break free of the shackles of Big Food and start your journey now to a long, vibrant, purposeful life. Become a citizen of Naturopathic Earth.
Hello, everybody. This is A. Gregory Luna. You can call me Gregory. And welcome back to another episode of Naturopathic Earth Radio. I hope you're doing well today in this mid-January day. We had a rare snow day here in South Texas on Monday. Or I'm sorry, Tuesday, the day after MLK. It got below freezing with a chance of precipitation. And because down here in South Texas, we are not used to any of that, they just closed the schools and the government offices, and we were shut down. Now, people in the north, of course, are just laughing at us. But to be fair, when it's like 97 degrees in Minnesota and you guys are complaining of the heat, you know, we have 97 degrees essentially every day from June to September. So it's all relative, I suppose. But today we're going to talk about smoking and mental health disorders. Before we begin, of course, the website is naturopathicearth.com. Go check it out if you want to see some articles. It's best to use the search icon, the search feature, or you can pull down on the tabs depending on what you want to see. There's one on natural remedies. There's one on biohacking the body. There's one on cleaning the house. Because I used to write about a blog a day. Because this website has now been around for like a year. Now I don't write as much, but there's a lot of material there that you have to unearth to find. So I would probably use the pull-down tabs. Also, I am a paleo-certified health coach. If you want help losing weight, as you all know, I have lost weight and kept it off for 25 years. So maybe I can help you out if no one else has been able to crack the riddle, the sphinx-like enigma of your weight loss. So why not give it a shot? I am a little under the weather. I don't have the oomph that I normally do, but about three times a year, and I think the last time was in May, I get these quasi-sinus issues, and I don't know what they are. I get like body aches and chills, but I never develop a fever, and I have no energy, and but this time, normally I don't have a cough or a sore throat. This time I have a cough and I've been coughing through the night. So probably I'll be using the pause button because you probably don't want to hear me coughing up a storm. All right, so let's talk about smoking. Okay, so today we're going to be gleaning off of the American Psychological Association, the APA. The APA is famous for creating the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Health, and they are essentially the watchdog of mental health and psychiatric health here in America, along with the American Psychiatric Association, but I'm sure they probably work hand in hand and agree in about 99.999% of everything. But this is an article by Kristen Weir, not Kristen Wiig from SNL fame. Chad Morris, PhD, didn't begin his career with tobacco in mind. His wake-up call came while reviewing best practices for treating bipolar disorder. Quote, I had this aha moment when I realized, what's the one thing you have to be to benefit from the best services, said the associate professor in psychiatry department at the University of Colorado. Quote, the bottom line is you have to be alive, close quote. But for people with mental illnesses, just staying alive can be challenging. Listen to this line. People with serious mental illnesses treated in the public health system die a startling 25 years earlier than those without mental illness, according to a 2006 article in the Preventing Chronic Disease Journal. That journal needs a better name than Preventing Chronic Disease. This problem hasn't improved in the years since, Morris notes, and all too often smoking is part of that mortal equation. 25 years. So if you look at life expectancy in America, it's about what, 80, 79 years. So you're looking at most of these people dying at 55. I mentioned this to my students when we cover schizophrenia. We cover a brief section on mental health disorders. And I mentioned to them how schizophrenics, because they hear voices and see things and they believe that people are out to get them, they have a shorter life expectancy. Because can you imagine hearing voices and seeing things that aren't there? A lot of them turn to alcohol to numb the pain. And so, unfortunately, they have a higher rate of suicide. So, I mean, I guess it's not too surprising, but still, 25 years. Tobacco-related illnesses, including cancer, heart disease, and lung disease, are among the most common causes of death in this population, in the population of mental health problems. And Americans with mental illnesses have a 70% greater likelihood of smoking than the general population, according to a new study from the CDC. People with mental illnesses also smoke more often than smokers without mental illnesses. Experts attribute the link between smoking and mental illness to a number of factors. Biochemistry probably plays some part. Quote, nicotine is a very powerful drug, and that's true whether somebody has a mental illness or not, close quote, says Judith Prochaska, a psychologist at Stanford. In some cases, people with mental illnesses may be using tobacco to mask symptoms or medication side effects. Some might also be more affected by nicotine withdrawal. Quote, people with panic attacks, for instance, may have a harder time quitting because the symptoms of withdrawal, such as increased heart rate, can trigger an attack. Close quote. Nicotine can improve attention and concentration, Morris says, appealing benefits for some with mental health patients. However, nicotine's benefits are short-lived. Its effects last only about 5 minutes at a time, Morris says. In any case, he adds, the possible advantages of nicotine shouldn't equate to a free pass for smokers. Quote, of course, there's a benefit to any drug. That's why people use them. But there are better coping strategies. That's good to know. I didn't know nicotine gives you attention and concentration. Clearly, I am a smoking virgin because had I ever smoked a nicotine, I would have known that. But I've never smoked a cigarette before. You know, I went through my high school life surrounded by other chubby nerds. And all we did was play Star Trek and watch Star Wars and daydreamed of women. We weren't going to cool parties and where you'd be more likely to indulge in such things. So I've never, you know, I've been blessed never to have gotten hooked on it. Biochemistry only goes so far toward explaining the high rate of tobacco use in people with mental illnesses. Social and environmental factors are also to blame. Often people with mental disorders experience a laundry list of risk factors for tobacco use. They're more likely to have lower socioeconomic status. That's true. We know poorer people tend to smoke more. And to experience more homelessness or other stressful living situations, for instance. Plus, they often lack medical insurance and access to resources that could help them quit. Quote, a lot of these folks have a bunch of strikes against them, close quote. More insidious explanations also account for the higher rate of cigarette use in the population. Quote, big tobacco has targeted this group for decades. Amen to that. Who hasn't Big Tobacco targeted? I love the hypocrisy of Big Tobacco because if you look, they'll do those public service announcements that you see, like, please stop smoking. This is a message from Philip Morris. And we're supposed to be, oh, thanks, Philip Morris. You really care about our health. You're doing public service announcements. You're so great. No, they know the science. They know once you smoke, you're hooked forever. So it's a win-win because it looks like a PR win because you're really wanting to get people off of smoking, but you know that they're not going to get off of smoking. And even though smoking rates as a whole have been dropping off here in America, and when I mean smoking, I mean tobacco, not weed, because we all know weed's increasing. But in other parts of the world, it has skyrocketed. Big tobacco makes so much more of their money from China, India, and underdeveloped parts of the world. So if you look at their grand scheme, their grand scale, they can be willing to forego some profits here in the United States if they know they can make a tons of money in even Europe and then, of course, other parts of the world. And don't be deceived. I mean, even if you watch shows like Mad Men and other shows that deal with the tobacco industry back in the 50s, they've known the entire time that smoking is bad for your health. Don't be deceived into thinking that we just had some serendipitous discovery in the 1950s. Like, what? What? Smoking's bad for us? What? Well, we didn't know. They've known the entire time, just like vaccines, just like a load of other things. Let's proceed. More insidious explanations. In a 2007 paper, Prochaska reported in Schizophrenia Bulletin that the tobacco industry specifically marketed cigarettes to patients with schizophrenia and worked successfully to exempt psychiatric hospitals from smoking bans. She also found that tobacco companies funded research to support the idea that people with schizophrenia needed to smoke as a form of self-medication, a notion that hasn't been borne out by the evidence. What a surprise. What a surprise. A big business company creating its own studies and funding these studies to make it look like their product is actually beneficial and should be used more. What? This never happens, right? Big food never does this. Big pharma never does this. Big government never does this. Unfortunately, the culture of the mental health system has also helped to perpetuate tobacco use among people with mental disorders, says Morris. Psychiatric hospitals have a history of rewarding patients with cigarettes or outdoor smoke breaks for good behavior. These days, tobacco-based incentives are becoming less common in psychiatric settings, yet many behavioral health professionals still have misconceptions about whether the patient should quit. Says Morris, the biggest myth you still hear is that folks need to keep smoking because it helps with their psychiatric symptoms. Close quote. In fact, quitting smoking does not impair mental health recovery. On the contrary, tobacco use is associated with greater depressive symptoms, a greater likelihood of psychiatric hospitalization, and an increase in suicidal behavior. And this is for everybody. So again, higher rate of depression, hospitalization, and suicide. Abstaining from cigarettes, on the other hand, can help people with other addictions maintain sobriety, says Prochaska. And despite some misconceptions, mental health patients can stop smoking. Studies have shown that people with depression, schizophrenia, and post-traumatic stress disorder can quit without impairing their mental health recovery, says Prochaska. She works with smokers with a full range of psychiatric disorders recruited from acute inpatient settings. Using a combination of motivational approaches, cognitive behavioral therapy, and nicotine replacement medications, quote, we're seeing quit rates comparable to those in the general population. That's great. Let's continue here. Certainly, there are good reasons to kick the habit. In a 2013 article in the New England Journal of Medicine, McAfee and colleagues found that smokers in the general population lose at least a decade of life compared with non-smokers. The size of the effect on mortality is enormous. The good news is that the impact of quitting is also dramatic, says McAfee. If you quit before 35, you gain back a whole decade of life expectancy. And even if you quit in late middle age, you gain back 5 or 6 years. It reminds me, you know, my mother started smoking when I was probably around, when she was probably around 50. And again, and as I mentioned in Confessions of an Obese Child, she has a history of anxiety and depression. And then for whatever reason, she just quit like 6 years later, cold turkey, and she's never gone back to it. Questions remain, however, about how best to help smokers with mental illnesses. More than 8,007 articles informed the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services clinical practice guidelines for treating tobacco, Prochaska notes, and fewer than 30 of those focus on people with current mental illness or addictive disorders. There's still a lot of science that needs to occur to show how we can maximize treatment effects of quitting smoking. What's most acceptable, most efficacious, most tolerable, and safest? Yet the move to ban smoking in psychiatric hospitals and treatment centers has been surprisingly slow. A lot of hospitals are now smoke-free, which is even better than it was 10 years ago. However, most outpatient sites still use tobacco. Patients typically are still allowed smoke breaks and go right outside of the building to smoke. Gradually, healthcare practitioners are becoming aware of the issue of smoking among mental health patients, says McAfee. He points out that 20 years ago, primary care doctors and cardiologists viewed smoking as outside their scope of practice. But as more and more patients developed lung cancer and suffered heart attacks, physicians realized they were going to do their patients in any favor by ignoring tobacco status. I think we're almost at the beginning of the paradigm shift in mental health treatment. Yeah, I mean, you would think that cardiologists should care about if their patients are smoking, given that there is a correlation there. When treating smokers with mental disorders, expert notes, it's important to pay close attention to the medications they are taking. Fortunately, nicotine replacement therapy doesn't interfere with antidepressants or antipsychotics, which is good, Prochaska says, and is often a great resource to help patients quit. However, smoke itself can alter the levels of psychiatric medications in the bloodstream. Tars and cigarette smoke affect the rates at which the liver metabolizes certain medications, causing blood levels of antidepressants and antipsychotics to decline. If a patient quits smoking, blood levels rise, and his or her old dose can become toxic. What looks like symptoms getting worse when people quit smoking can often be a medication side effect, says Morris. Providers need to assess for potential medication toxicity and adjust medication dosages accordingly. Often patients with mental illnesses have been smoking more for years and more cigarettes per day than smokers in the general population. As a result, they need to be more intensive treatment to help them quit. People with mental illnesses may benefit from longer duration of treatment, says McAfee. Still, Morris says, therapists can help these patients by using the same tools they would use for other smokers. So group therapy, individual therapy, and motivational interviewing, for instance. You treat these populations pretty much like you treat the general population, he says. Ultimately, he adds, there's no excuse for not helping patients and their dependents on tobacco. These individuals want to quit, they can quit, and providers in the behavioral healthcare system have the best skills to help them. Psychologists are a key to this, of course. They're going to end that. Psychologists are the saviors, because this is from the APA. So, of course, the APA is going to think, like, the world can't exist without psychologists. All right, I just wanted to finish up this podcast with a couple of statistics from the CDC here. So CDC, 36% of adults with any mental illness smoke more tobacco, compared to 25% of the regular population, 36% of those with mental illnesses smoke. So 11% increase over the general population. 65% of adult smokers report co-use of alcohol, compared to 48% of adult non-smokers. Well, if you look at the breakdown of these drugs, too, so it's 18% smoke, 15% do marijuana, and then 5% do cocaine. Health effects: people with mental illness or substance use disorders die about 5 years earlier than those without these disorders. Many of these deaths are caused by cigarette smoking. The most common cause of death among people with mental illnesses are heart disease, cancer, and lung disease, which can all be caused by smoking. That's interesting. So the most common cause of death among people with mental illness are three things that have nothing to do with mental illness: heart disease, cancer, and lung disease. But all those are connected to smoking. Isn't that interesting? That is very interesting, I think. So theoretically, if you can get them off the smoking, they arguably would have a longer life expectancy. Drug users who smoke cigarettes are 4 times more likely to die prematurely than those who don't smoke. And then tobacco smoke can interact and inhibit the effectiveness of certain medications taken by mental health and substance abuse patients. And then the CDC even here mentions tobacco industry marketing and influence. The tobacco industry has used multiple strategies to market cigarettes to populations within mental illness facilities. One, providing free or cheap cigarettes to psychiatric facilities. Free cigarettes, so they, because they know. Of course, they can hide it and couch it under, oh, we're just trying to help out these people. Developing relationships with and making financial contributions to organizations that work with mentally ill patients. Yep. Funding research to foster the myth that cessation will be too stressful because persons with mental illnesses use nicotine to alleviate negative moods. Because, of course, it's in their best interest to make people think that you need to continue smoking. If not, the withdrawal would sidetrack you. Supporting efforts to block smoker-free psychiatric hospital policies. Creating marketing plans that target marginalized populations, including mentally ill, homeless, and LGBT individuals. That's interesting. And then they perpetuate this myth that people with mental health disorders are not interested in quitting, which is not true. They cannot quit, which is not true. Quitting interferes with the recovery from mental illnesses or addictions. That's not true. Tobacco is not as harmful as other substances. Clearly, we know that's not true. Tobacco is necessary for self-medication, and tobacco cessation would be too stressful. And tobacco cessation efforts might prevent treatment of other addictions. So, my takeaway here, and I really don't have a lot to say at the end of this podcast because I cannot relate to the cigarette smoking and to the mental health and its connection. I just thought it was interesting because I didn't know this, and I just like bringing up topics either that I find interesting or that I don't know about. And so I didn't know that there was a higher rate of mental disorders with people who smoke a lot. So last thing I want to mention, of course, is pass this information on to other people. If you like any of the content that I provide you, please, takes 2 seconds, post a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast for Confessions of an Obese Child or MP Radio. I would appreciate it. It would only take 2 seconds so we can get the message out. As you know, I'm just a teacher who does this on the side for fun. So please do so. Until next time, guys, take care and God bless. Bye-bye.
Earth Radio. Visit us at www.naturopathicearth.com. Follow us on Twitter at Naturopath Earth and subscribe to us on iTunes. Don't forget to leave a review. And remember our core belief at naturopathicearth.com. Let food be thy medicine, let nature be thy healer. See you next time. Music courtesy of Art of Escapism.